Welcome to Paw Print Academy, your blueprint to raising better dogs. My name is Ryan, and I'll be your host for this journey. I've got my trusty co-host here, Brianna.
Hello.
And together, we're bringing you real-world training insights built on leadership, structure, and proven methods. We record this podcast with live clients on the line in one take with live, unscripted questions and answers. At the end of the day, this podcast is a lot more than just teaching your dog to sit or stay. It's about building trust, creating calmness, and becoming the kind of leader your dog truly needs. We do that with our three-pillar method of trust, obey, and perform. Together, we'll show you how these three pillars shape every step of training. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. Good evening, episode 12, the first commands every puppy should learn, building foundation. We're going to get right to it at the beginning here. We're going to say that puppies for this episode are going to be the first 2 years. And I know that that's not a puppy
right
by the time they're 2 years old. But the goal, so this is the last puppy specific episode. The last two episodes, we kind of said that this doesn't just go for puppies. It also goes for, you know, no matter what their age is, but this is, let's just talk at the beginning of training. It is puppy centric because it's the last episode of our like puppy series. Mm-hmm. But, I would say that everything that we talk about today should 100% be like pushed for those first 2 years of a dog's life.
Right. And even if your dog has training, these are the basics that you can always practice.
Yep. So good evening, everybody. And we are coming to you kind of recorded live from a huge mess in here. We have a new podcast room/studio that is under construction, and a work in progress is a loose term for this right now. we're like sitting on top of stuff. So I don't know that we could cram any more into this room right now. All right. So the first commands that we'll say every dog should know in the first 2 years. Core idea as we jump into it tonight is the early commands give puppies structure, focus, and a shared language with the owners. Because obviously puppies and dogs don't speak English. Mm-hmm. So, right, and I say that, I realize that we now have a bunch of listeners across the pond in the UK, and Lord only knows what language you speak right now. No, I'm just kidding. I have a lot of friends. that I just realized that joke isn't going to land very well because it's right. Not to the people that I would be normally saying to. So, all right, just ignore it. We'll backtrack. the joke is that the Brits, they speak English.
Right.
But you can only understand
yeah.
selective parts of it.
Right.
It's still English, but it's not American.
Right.
We speak American.
Yeah, it's the accent.
Sorry, I had to explain it. It's not just the accent, though. The words are different.
I gotcha.
All right, so early commands. I'm going to start over. Early commands give puppies structure, focus, and a shared language with their owners. Start simple, keep it consistent, and build from success. Mm-hmm. So that's our core idea that we're laying out tonight. And when we talk about early dog life structure, we talk a lot about focus and engagement, this big buzzword called engagement. Mm-hmm. But without engagement, you don't have a dog that's trained. You don't have anything, because if a dog's not engaged to you, they're engaged to something else, because mm-hmm. a dog's always looking for something.
Yep.
They're never just like sitting down and just like, I was going to say a different analogy, but then I'll have to explain that one. I'm really trying to dial this in. Dogs are always looking for things to do. They're right. always looking for something. They're always watching your expressions mm-hmm. and your body language and trying to figure out how to work and how to live mm-hmm. in the situation that's going on around them. So with that in mind, if you aren't engaging your dog and then you're giving them a command, it's highly unlikely they're not going to listen.
Right.
Because they're like, wait, what? What you were talking? What's up?
Yeah, they're not going to be just listening to you every second
yeah.
without you.
Right, because it's not a language attention. That they can even yeah. communicate with. Mm-hmm. Right. All right. So the first one that we recommend, and the first thing that we recommend, I'm going to talk about two things. Cues, language, drills are separate. Those things, they're mm-hmm. separate from what I've kind of outlined here. The three basic commands that I think that every dog should know in the first 2 years starts with sit. Mm-hmm. And sit, the reason I chose sit, because I went back and forth with this, because there's like, okay, as a dog trainer, really, are you going with sit?
Right.
But I really think that sit is very valuable. And I think it's very valuable because one, across every dog that I, and not every dog, but every dog owner that I've ever talked to mm-hmm. prides themselves on the fact that their dog can sit.
Right.
And it gets mentioned immediately as soon as we start to do like an evaluation. Yeah. It's like, oh, they can sit.
Right.
Watch, yep. watch this. Sit, mm-hmm. sit, 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 mm. sit. Can you sit? Good. Sit. Oh, good job. Sit. Right. And this repeats itself.
Yeah.
Right. But I love it. And it's okay because it's that excitement, right? You taught your dog to do something and they're listening to you. That's an incredibly exciting task. Mm-hmm. And it's an exciting event. Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with that. I don't want to discourage that. I think, and that's why it ranks as my number one thing that we can teach our dogs.
Yeah.
Because it also is incredibly valuable. And valuable in the terms that it gives the dog a job that immediately defines, it's relatively easy to teach, it's easy to lure the dog into. Mm-hmm. And once the dog figures it out, now the dog has a job.
Yeah.
Right. You want to talk about what you can do with a job?
Yeah, you can use it to build impulse control in puppies.
Right.
Most importantly.
And that, exactly. And that shapes the entire experience that you might have with your puppy or your dog, right? In those first couple of years. By giving the dog a job, we give the dog something to do rather than just don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. Mm-hmm. We got to give the dog something to do. So when they're doing something we don't want, even something as simple as sit is a job that we can do, enforce, and hold the dog accountable to do once they understand it and exhibit their understanding.
Right. And I think the things that people miss with puppies is putting them like on a leash. They're like, well, how do I make them sit? Well, you put them on a leash.
Right, right. Yeah, because the leash skills are so important. And so we teach all of our initial obedience skills on a leash. And a lot of people are just averse to that because they're like, no, I only use the leash when I go out to walk.
Right.
But it's like, hold on. But you want your dog to listen when you're out on a walk. You should pattern the same environment in wherever you want the dog to listen. So if you want the dog to listen on a leash on a walk, you need to teach the dog to listen on a leash without those same distractions.
Right. And also when you're first starting out, you could just walk inside.
Right. Yeah. The dog does not, and as a puppy, the dog does not need as much physical exercise as they need mental exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So, a puppy is growing. They're not going to get overweight. I mean, they can, I've seen it, but, they're usually not going to end up overweight as a brand new puppy. They're just growing and growing and growing. And everything that goes in just turns into energy and muscle.
Yeah.
So where we're going with that is they don't, exercise is important, yes, but not at the expense of the mental stimulation. Mental stimulation ranks high and above physical exercise mm-hmm. when you're trying to teach your puppy to like listen to you and calm down.
Yep.
Yeah. Cause yeah, you can just run your puppy, run and run and run and run until they're so tired they can't move. And then they're just going to sleep. They're not going to calm down. They're just going to zonk out. Mm-hmm. Instead, we can teach them to calm down by repetition and patterning. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to talk about. All right. So sit teaches puppies patience and also focus. Because, hey, I told you to sit. That is a specific task with specific points of performance. You teach them how to do it, you pattern it, you hold them accountable, and then they perform it. Mm-hmm. That is the building blocks of this obedience concept, and the obedience concept is what builds so much engagement and fun and trust and relationship in this dog-human relationship. Yeah. So the other things that it's going to do is it's going to make greetings a lot calmer.
Yeah.
Because a dog who's on all four paws is a spring waiting to go off. Mm-hmm. They feel significantly more comfortable jumping and, moving quickly because they are in a much higher state of arousal or alertness.
Yep.
When they're on all four paws and they're like standing. Mm-hmm. So teaching a dog to sit or hold a position helps to increase that calm and respectful greeting environment that we want to see when we bring guests over, which is incredibly important in the Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays.
Right, and in order for your dog to do that, you're going to have to rep it out beforehand. Your dog's not going to just do it successfully on Thanksgiving Day when you have 27 guests over.
You cannot just teach your dog to sit 20,000 times, and then when guests come over, you tell them to sit, and then they're like, I'm sorry, hold on, there's guests over here. Mm-hmm. Because this is a concept called generalization, and when you change specific variables to the dog or in front of the dog, the picture looks different to the dog. It's like a puzzle. Mm-hmm. If you take a puzzle with a puzzle picture on it, but you just change it, all the puzzle pieces are exactly the same. But if you put a different picture on there, how much more difficult is it going to be for you to put that puzzle together? Mm-hmm. If let's say that you've put this puzzle together 100 times, you know where all the pieces go, but all the puzzle pieces remain the same. You just change the picture. Mm-hmm. And now you spin around 3 times and go. Now you're looking down at it, and this puzzle that you've put together 1,000 times looks completely different. That's how a dog feels when you just change a couple of variables.
Yep.
It's a totally different picture to them, yeah. Which is why when we take a dog in, we do so many, we do 100 different pictures, right? It's like, cool, I want you to sit here. I want you to sit outside. I want you to sit on the sidewalk. I want you to sit on the porch. I want you to sit on the grass. I want you to sit on the gravel. I want you to sit you to sit in the coffee shop, in the brewery, in the mall, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, we have to get them experience to all these different things so that they're like, oh, sit just means to sit no matter where I am. Mm-hmm. At that point, that's where obedience starts to make a human proud mm-hmm. because they're like, oh, yeah, my dog understands. But generalization is much easier for humans than it is for dogs.
Yeah.
And so we can be like, cool, sit is specific to the performance of this task, regardless, and the positioning, regardless of the environment.
Yep.
But dogs don't think that way. They don't get it. So we got to show them. Mm-hmm. So that's why Brianna's saying you've got to rep those things out. You have to practice those things. You got to practice people coming over. You got to practice doorbells going off. You got to practice doors opening and closing and slamming and shutting and creaking and everything. Mm-hmm. That's how dog training goes. All right. Next thing that it does, creates a default behavior rather than jumping, right? Yep. And so usually another reason why sit is like this primary thing that we want, because a dog or a puppy jumps up on you in order to get close to you. And when they come down, they almost always land in a sit. Mm-hmm. If a dog jumps up on you and you step into them, you kind of push them back, a lot of times they kind of fold down into a sit. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, you can name that command and then reward for it.
Yeah.
So it is a great default behavior.
Right, or replacement
behavior. Or replacement behavior, right. Give your dog a job that you want them to do rather than what you don't want them to do. No, don't jump. Sit. Oh, good. Sit. That's so good.
Right, because if you tell a puppy to not jump, they're not going to know what to do instead unless you tell them.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a reward for what we want. Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, and the final point, it's super easy to teach, and it's easy to reinforce. All right, so let's talk through it. So when I first teach a puppy to sit, I'm going to use, we've talked about this a couple of times, how it is. All right. Sorry about that. We had a little internet outage, and so we just had to reconnect. We are back up and running. So we were talking about how sit was easy to teach and easy to reinforce.
Yep.
So when we talk about, I'm trying to get back on track here. When we talk about sit, we've got the three languages that we teach and that we can teach a dog. The most basic language is food luring. Then we got leash pressure. Then we have verbal language. And with puppies, we use food luring. Mm-hmm. And so luring that dog with food, and we lure the dog forward and then up, and their head kind of comes up towards the food and their butt just kind of naturally sinks down. And that's how we can start to shape the sit. Yep. You have more to add on that one?
No, I was going to jump right into the question because we had already addressed the first question of why it's the best command to start with. So how do you avoid food luring forever?
So we start patterning and we move to our second language. I would say we layer in the leash pressure, because I think that leash pressure is one of those languages that we don't ever really want to fade out.
Nope.
Even for a dog that you want to go, or that you want a dog to be off leash capable and you want them to run around a park or run around your yard or your property or whatever, we still want to always continue to bolster their understanding of leash pressure, because at some point I want to take my dog out in public and I can't walk through a dog friendly store like Lowe's, Home Depot, Academy, Michael's,
any
Home
those.
Goods, anything. I can't walk through those.
Right.
Not on a leash.
Yep.
For sure. Even the stores that are like, yeah, we're dog friendly as long as they're well behaved.
Yeah.
They're not going to put up with you having your dog off of a leash.
Nope.
So the leash is here to stay.
Yeah.
You might as well work with it.
Right.
When we do that, like that's when, and as we integrate that dog with more leash pressure and more leash skills, we can fade out the luring with the food because they understand the next language.
Right, and we also use the alternate marker words for treatable and non-treatable, which means that you don't really have to avoid food luring or treating necessarily, not really luring, but treating. You don't have to avoid treating. You just change your marker words up.
Yeah.
And then as far as building reliability, I'd say like corrections. right? And nobody wants to hear that you have to correct your dog, but you have to teach your dog what no means, just like you have to teach your dog what yes means.
Yeah, right.
Because if your dog doesn't know what no means and there's no consequence for no, that no doesn't matter. And when your dog does something wrong and you say no, your dog ignores you because you haven't told them that there was a consequence for their actions or a consequence that follows that no.
Yeah, 100%. And that goes also, so the next question that I had here was share a case where teaching sit fixed another problem, right? So jumping is 100% where I go.
Yeah.
Because when I walk into a client's house and we're doing an evaluation, they're like, I just want you to fix the jumping. They just jump and jump and jump, like on everyone. Jump on me, jump on everyone else. All that dog needed to know was what to do rather than jump. Yeah. Because right now they show up and they're like, I'm jumping and this is great. This is fun. I get lots of attention. Mm-hmm. They get all crazy. They're yelling a bunch of words and we're all having fun. But to the owner's like, I can't get through to this dog. But they never taught them what to do instead.
Right.
And so a lot of times you teach them sit and then you enforce it with the leash and with the leash pressure. You get a dog to sit. You have enough leash for them to sit, but not enough to jump. You step on that leash. And when they jump up, that leash gets tight all by itself. They get an immediate correction. And then they're like, oh, what was that?
Right.
And now you have an opportunity to teach them. Mm-hmm. They sink back down into that sit and you immediately throw a party. Oh my gosh, you're the best dog ever. Great job. Here's a bunch of treats. And they're like, oh, this sit thing is pretty cool.
Right.
Yeah, that's all it takes. But I say that all it takes. That's all it takes to start shaping that in the dog's mind.
Right.
Then it takes consistency.
Yep.
It takes like intestinal fortitude. You have to be like, I will not reward this dog for anything other than the sit when guests come over.
Also, the one thing I think people miss is like coming up with a word to break your dog from that position. Because if you don't ever teach your dog to break the position, then they're never going to hold the position. And you're just going to have to end up saying sit, 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 because you're going to reward them.
Also a good point.
And they're just going to get right back up. And then we have the dogs that just
when
sit
is the dog
and
done?
Pop up, sit, pop up, sit, pop up.
Yeah, they got to know when they're done.
Right.
They got to know when to do it and they got to know when they're done.
Yep.
For sure. All right. So the next command that we're going to highly recommend is place. Mm-hmm. So place ranks in at number two because it is the epitome of calm energy before the storm, right? We don't have to allow the storm though. So that potential energy of a dog laying on a bed is an incredibly powerful teaching tool. Mm-hmm. So place helps puppies settle and it builds duration skills. When you use a place bed, place mat, place anything, something that was kind of like has definitive borders and ideally is raised off the ground just a little bit so that the dog not only has to step outside of a boundary, but also has to change elevation. That's really, really important. And it really helps you to define this clear border of the place bed to your dog. So now when they step off the place bed, they're like, I'm also stepping down and off of this thing. Now you can enforce and hold your dog accountable to not leave that area and then reward when they're on it and correct when they're not. And it makes it very, very, very clear in the dog's mind where their place is. Mm-hmm. And then you can start building duration. We start moving back and then coming forward and rewarding them. We start moving back further. We start increasing the time between those reward events. All of those things build duration.
Yep.
Right? Duration, distraction.
Distance.
And distance. Perfect. Mm-hmm. What's next?
So place gives them a job in the home. So people inevitably all the time are like, my dog is eating the couch. My dog is begging at the table. My dog is jumping on the counter. I don't remember the last time I told a dog not to go to place, right? Just naturally, like when in the home. Because you can have a place bed anywhere. The dog doesn't have to be in one singular place in the house. But place beds are transferable. It could be different in each room. But you can tell the dog place anywhere and have the dog go to it. It doesn't mean sit. It doesn't mean lay down. It means put all four paws on this and stay within the boundary
right.
of this item.
And so we don't even train place on a specific bed. We train it on all sorts of different beds, on couch cushions, on towels, on blankets, on wherever. Because I want to be able to point to a spot, a place, and be like, hey, you pause here. And then just have them go there mm-hmm. and be like, okay, I'll wait for you. That's the concept.
Right. And then second point is it prevents chaos during meals, which I already mentioned, visitors, and downtime. When you're sitting on the couch, your dog should be sitting on place, right? If you want them on the couch with you, fine. But it's a great opportunity to use place to practice.
Yep.
And then visitors, inevitably everyone comes to us, right? Our dog jumps on people at the door. And I always look at people and I'm like, oh, why is your dog even at the door?
Right.
Why aren't they?
Give them a job.
Yeah. Why aren't they over there? Why aren't they in their crate? Why aren't they on place? Why aren't they laying down on something?
And most of the times what we hear is, oh, well, they just don't. I tell them that, but they don't stay there.
Right.
Right. I got it.
You got to practice.
But like, right. If you tell your kid to go to your room and then they don't go to your room, what do?
Right.
You just throw your hands up and you go, ah, they just don't listen. Mm-hmm. But with kids, people take it a lot more personally. They're like, no, no, you're going to your room.
Yep.
Well, the dogs are no different.
Well. And then last one is impulse control, obviously, which we already talked about with sit. They have to stay on the place bed. They get off, you put them back, right? Impulse control.
Yes.
And then neutrality around distractions, which we have dealt with dogs that are aggressive or don't like guests coming into the home.
Yeah. Right?
It's their safe space, just like a kennel, but it doesn't make them feel so entirely like trapped.
Right.
So they just.
It's a little more freedom than the crate, mm-hmm. but it's not complete freedom.
Right. They get to hang out.
They get to hang out. They get to be part of the family.
Yeah.
They get to relax. They get to see these visitors
from a
distance.
Right.
And we do not encourage people to go up and then pet those dogs on place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Leave them alone. They're just on place. They're working. Yeah. It's a job. Mm-hmm. If you really want the whole like, yeah, go and see this dog, then give them a break.
Yeah.
All right. I'll take this one. So mm-hmm. go-to methods for teaching place to a young puppy. Mm-hmm. So right off the bat, I use food, right? We lure the dog over. And I like to teach a dog to walk over place mm-hmm. first. So I'll take a bed or a little placemat or something, even that if it's like a little elevated platform, put it on the floor, and I will walk around it and lure the dog with my hand up and over the place bed mm-hmm. at the point where the dog gets all four paws on the place bed. So first off, before we even do place, I'm just walking over it
right
to make sure that the dog will go over it mm-hmm. right. We're not using place, we're not using anything. Go over it, give him food. Go over it, give him food. Mm-hmm. Now go over it and stop just for a second, give them food, and then free them, mm-hmm. right? Let them run around. lure them, go over it, stop just for a second, give them food, then start naming it. Mm-hmm. Once you have established that pattern, then you start naming it. After you name it, now you can put the place bed into a corner or one or two sides that are kind of limited. And now you can kind of lure them into that corner. And as soon as their paws hit the placemat, we name the command place. And then we mark and reward. Mm-hmm. And then the final step is to, right, there's probably a couple of steps in between that you can kind of, you know, figure out to just kind of shape. But the final step is to get them to go to their place. And that one's the hardest one. And so the way we do that is I'm going to drop some food on the placebed. They're going to be on a leash. I'm going to drop some food on the placebed. I'm going to walk away. They're going to try to get to the food. They're going to know that the food is there, but I just walk away. Mm-hmm. I don't tell them no. I don't tell them leave it. I don't tell them anything. I just walk away. And then I get them hyped up and I show them the placebed. I point over there and I'm like, yeah, you want to go over there? You want to go over there? You want to get that food? And they don't understand all of that, right? I'm just getting real excited. Mm-hmm. I get real excited and then I say, all right, ready, go, go to your place, go to your place. And they run over there to get the food. And I start shaping that command, go to your place.
Yep. Nice.
All right. How do you explain the value of place to new owners? Owners, so inevitably we run into owners that are like, right, but they just sleep on the couch. Why do I need a place bed? Mm-hmm. What do you say?
I always say, I go with like the unsupervised puppy method, right? It's at no point do you want to keep one eye on your puppy at all times. And placebed is kind of your saving grace for that, right? It's sort of like the jumper that you put your kid in when you need to wash the dishes. And so you just put the dog on place. You do the dishes. They can be right next to you. I don't care. Be right next to you, but on a placebed. And they can't step off of the placebed because they're right next to you. Right. Or you could start practicing distance and duration and have them across the room where you can still see them and hold them accountable. But the key to that is you can see them and hold them accountable to being on the placebed while you do things, because that's where the puppy learns. I think a lot of people get stuck on the fact that you need to stand right next to the puppy. Be like, no place, no place, no place. Let them make mistakes, right? Mm-hmm. Correct them. That's how they learn what no means.
Absolutely.
Put them back. Puppies get tired of going back to the same place. They're like, oh, this is exhausting. So annoying. Right? It is. And eventually they'll be yeah. like, you know what? I'm just going to stay right here.
Right. This is easier.
Same thing when you're just treating them for going on their place. Eventually, by like the fifth, sixth, seventh time, the dog goes, I'm not even going to get off the place. I'm just going to stay right here. And then we have to use the leash to get them off the place because they've learned.
Yeah, you're just going to make me go back on it.
Right. If I just stay on the place, they just keep giving me food. So I'm just going to stay here. And so I don't even know what that was that fell behind me.
I'm just saying this podcast room is almost uninhabitable.
Right. I'm like, I've already been hit in the head once this week. I don't need a second.
Something, a big air mattress just fell off of this like high shelf.
All right. Anyways.
Behind Brianna. So, and now she's scared. Yeah.
Anyway, but you build that, right? I don't even know what I was talking about. I'm going to be honest with you. I totally lost it.
Puppies staying on place.
Right, staying they on
get,
place.
They get tired.
Oh, like, right. They get tired of going back and forth and back and forth. But you're the person that has to outlast them, just like... You're still laughing at me. Just like when your dog is barking in the crate and you can't let them out, you have to outlast that.
Yeah.
And it takes more patience than the dog has in order to train things like that. And if you don't have it, then maybe a puppy is not for you. Maybe a senior dog from the shelter. You know? A puppy is not for everybody.
I'm gonna only say one comment and then we're going to move on, but... I can't explain how many people they are like retired, they are relaxing, they are at the coasting phase of their lives.
Right, empty nesters.
Empty nesters. And then they're like, I'm going to get this puppy Belgian Malinois.
Yikes. I wouldn't even do that. Like,
why?
Right.
Why did you do that?
I'd definitely adopt an older dog over a little puppy.
Right. You've got to find a dog that's in the phase of
right.
life.
Right. It has to match your phase of life. Right. I think that's what we see a lot of the time, too. It's like, oh, well, I got this dog to change my lifestyle.
Yep.
And a lot of times seen that, doesn't work.
I'm
and
not even going to say a lot of times. I've never seen that work.
Right.
I've never seen
and the dog
I got this suffers. Dog to change my lifestyle. I am sedentary and I am not active.
Mm-hmm.
And I got this dog so that then I will have to go and get active.
Right.
That is not what ends up happening.
Right. I'm sorry, but if you're 82 and honest, you get a GSP, it's going to be a crazy ride. But like you just commit to it, right? It's just a crazy ride.
And there's no, we're laughing about this because we see the pattern over and over.
Yeah.
But there's no part of this that I will rally behind.
Oh yeah, you
proactive
can do
owners.
It.
You can do it you for do sure, it. For yeah. sure. But
it's gonna be wild.
It's gonna be wild.
Crazy roller coaster. It's a roller coaster.
Right. We're totally here for it, and I really, really, really do invest in. And folks that just are like, look, I understand what I got into. I'm here for it. Just tell me what to do.
Right.
Sweet.
But I was,
I'm on it. Oh,
I was thinking
it.
About this earlier, like by myself in the car. And I was like, you know, like when like you're young and you get pregnant and you're going to have a baby and it's like so exciting, right? You have to upgrade your house. Usually, right? Usually, a lot of the time. You have to upgrade your house immediately. You need a third bedroom. You need a fourth bedroom. You need whatever.
Oh my gosh.
You commit to a life change. And I think a lot of the time what people miss out on, I know you're still laughing, but I'm so serious right now. When you get a dog, you're committing to a life change. Especially if it's a dog that has like issues, you know, like rescues, things like that. Like you are committing to a life change. That dog is probably not going to be normal.
Right. Yeah. Right. Because it's been through a lot.
Right. Right? And you can ask all the questions and we'll answer every single one of them or do our best to.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
it's just like a kid with special needs.
Right.
Like they have special needs and you have the dog that you have.
Yeah.
You don't have the dog that you see on YouTube.
Right. You adapt and you overcome.
Yeah. And as long as owners they take responsibility for that, I love those owners. Those are the owners that I will go so many more extra miles for, right? Because it's like, I get it, right? You have the dog you have. You're owning that. You're like, look, just help me. Just mm-hmm. help me. And that's where we come in.
Yeah.
All right. So the last point, the last command that we recommend, our top three, is recall. And recall comes in hard because recall is a safety issue. And I don't pull any punches on this. If your dog does not come back when you call it, let me rephrase. If you have no accountability over whether your dog comes back or not, then I would ask the question if you're being responsible. And what I mean by that is I have repped out Nala's recall command 1,000 or 10,000 times. But when we go out somewhere, I put an e-collar on her. When we go out and we go hiking or we go wherever, we're going off leash, she wears an e-collar because that is responsible. Mm-hmm. Because if she doesn't come back when I call her for whatever reason, I need to ensure that I can communicate with her.
Yep.
That's it, right? So when I say if your dog doesn't recall just because you call them, right? Or you're on a leash, you're on an e-collar, you're on something, right? But if your dog can't understand that when you do this, whatever this is, that they're supposed to come back. Well, how are you supposed to get them back?
Yeah.
How are they going to just not run away? Mm-hmm. And this is where sometimes we get the call.
Right. I'd say the two things we get top are leash walking and recall, for sure. When we show up, people are like, my dog doesn't recall, or my dog sucks on a leash.
Yeah. Reliable recall saves lives. Mm-hmm. There's no question about it.
But also the thing I want to like reiterate, I don't even know if it's in your bullet points because I haven't even looked. But if you don't practice recall with your dog won't have it when you need it or want it to happen.
Right.
If you're not constantly or periodically telling that dog what come means or hear or whatever your recall is, it could be their name. I don't care.
Yeah.
But if you're not periodically trying that and testing your dog in different environments at different levels of distraction, then your dog's not going to have it when you really, really, really want it.
Yep. So right off the bat, we start on a leash. Mm-hmm. All right. We start on a short leash. Then we go to a long leash. Then we go to a long line. Right. Those are steps in the process. And the whole point is we want to completely control that idea of accountability. If you cannot affect a change with your dog when they blow you off, you don't have accountability. Mm-hmm. And it's important because otherwise they pattern their own lesson. And we always want to shape their lessons. So we start on a leash or a long line so that we can prevent failure. If you say come or hear, which are the, I guess, probably the two most popular ones that I hear. And your dog is like, eh, nah. They've just patterned a different end state than you want. Mm-hmm. You've got to prevent that. You have to prevent the dog from failing. You have to help them along.
Right. So it's from day one.
From day one, from the very first time. So it's come and then pressure. It's come and then taps on the e-collar.
You're reeling your dog in.
It's come and then it's something, mm-hmm. right, that the dog understands that enforces accountability. It's non-negotiable.
The first thing owners, like the first mistake owners make is letting their puppy out in the yard because it's fenced in and not having a leash on them and having no accountability. And then they call them
because
they don't come in.
Because they did it like 5 times or 10 times on a leash.
Right.
And their dog comes just fine.
Right.
Now they take the dog off the leash and we assume that the dog is dumb and doesn't realize that they're not on a leash now.
Right.
Dogs are very intuitive.
Yeah.
They're very quick to be like, cool, I was on this piece of rope before, but now I am not.
Yeah.
Now I can do what I want.
Yep.
And we give the dog too much too fast, and then they fail.
Yep.
And then we're like, aw, and we're let down. And then we project that onto the dog, and now it hurts our relationship. Mm-hmm. So we hate that. We gotta prevent that failure, and we can do that with the tools that we have. All right. Pairing come with rewards is super, super important, mm-hmm. right? Clear marker words, super important. If you are inevitably you're yelling and you're trying to get your dog to come and they're not coming and you're like, you have to go out there. And then suddenly they finally turn around and they run towards you. Mm-hmm. You cannot lose your mind on them. They don't understand. You got to throw a party. You got to be able to turn off that all of those negative emotions, all that frustration. You got to be able to turn it off, tune it out, and immediately throw the party. Mm-hmm. Because when they do come to you, it has to be paired with a reward.
Yep.
All right. A strong recall, and the last point I had here, right? A strong recall can prevent danger. Mm-hmm. The road is the number one issue, right? I don't think a week goes by without me seeing a post on Facebook somewhere of some dog that got hit by a car.
Yep.
And Now, I get that a lot of these tragedies happen without owners like actually calling the dogs.
Yeah.
Right. But some of them wouldn't have happened if the dog would have come back when the owner initially called them when they got outside the fence.
Mm-hmm.
Before, long before, hours before they actually ran away and then got across a road.
Yeah.
So recall is super important. There's really no reason that we cannot prioritize it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a ton of tools that we can use in order to get there. But there are, you can progressively use, just like we use distance, duration, and distraction, you can use long lines of progressively longer length to practice the same things.
Yep.
And then you can go to lighter and lighter lines until it's just a string, right?
Yeah.
So that the dog feels less, you know, proprioception that they're on a leash.
Mm-hmm.
But you still can put some pressure on that collar if you need to.
Yep.
All right. What's the process to introduce recall to puppies?
Inside on a short leash. With like pretty much no distraction going on.
Yeah. So my favorite drill to teach puppies to recall is actually with no recall. Mm. And that is my, the get it free. We call it get it free. Mm. Get it free game goes like this. I take a piece of food, toss it down the hallway. Puppy runs to go get it. I yell free. As soon as the puppy gets the food, I yell free, which tells the puppy they're released, come get your treat, and they run to me and get a treat. So basically what I'm doing is I'm creating ping pong. Ping pong is another variation of a recall game that we do later. It's a little more advanced where you're just ping ponging them between two trainers or two people where one person's like, come, and then the other person's come, and then the dog just runs back and forth and gets treats. So initially though, we pattern that by ourselves, which is get it, toss a piece of food, scamper, 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 go get the food. It's super fun for puppies. They love it because there's food over there. There's food over here. There's food everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It also lowers resource guarding because it shows the dog that there's just unlimited resources. So really important when you're shaping a puppy. That's how I like to introduce it, because then all you have to do is add come.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's get it. They go, they get the food. As soon as they eat it, you say come. And then as soon as they start coming, you go free. It's real easy to layer.
Yeah.
All right. Biggest mistake when owners make when teaching recall.
Punishment.
Yeah. I was going to.
Right. We already touched on all of these. I think you read the questions.
I don't ever read the questions. I'd come up with the questions beforehand and we just end up answering them.
Well, we definitely did, but yeah. That's efficient. Punishment. Yeah. When recalling your dog, like doesn't listen.
Right.
And then we're like, you're mad.
Get inside there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never works.
Nope.
In your favor.
Immediately teaches the dog, I'm not coming back next time.
Yep.
Yeah. And then, okay. Yeah. And then yeah, we
definitely talked about read that word for word, but
I
yeah,
did.
You definitely did, but okay.
Okay.
Yeah. He read the question. He's like, oh, I know I did.
All right.
But we answered it already, so that's great. I love that.
I love that.
Yeah.
All right. So at this point, I'm going to open it up for questions. If you have a question, now is the time to ask. It is about to be the Thanksgiving holiday. And so, right, so we are recording this on the 26th. So tomorrow is Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody that might be listening.
Happy Thanksgiving.
I mean, it's going to be a belated Thanksgiving by the time they listen to it. But we don't have very many people listening live tonight because I think everybody's traveling and being with family. All right.
Right, we've had the most questions this week about how does my dog act when there's 12 people over? And we're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Crate? Or right? Place.
Yeah, that's actually true. The today
final answer.
This last couple of weeks has all been very focused on dogs that I just realized that I may have made a mistake here. Heidi and Michael, did you have a question? I think I may have accidentally had you guys on mute.
Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
Hey, so we still are struggling with Maverick when he is finding a level to recall him when he's, for example, chasing the squirrel or, you know, has got something else that he finds more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just struggling on finding, I mean, I get that we're supposed to up the volume depending on the distraction.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, it's a fair correction if he's not listening.
Yeah. If you're getting to a level that you are worried about, then where we go next is that we try to pattern that as many times as you possibly can prior to those distractions. So there are going to be a couple of distractions that are probably going to be the highest level for him. And so what we want to do is we want to be proactive about finding lower level distractions and repping those out so that he is very, very quick to know the process that he's supposed to do. And basically show him the picture. You're showing him the answer before the question. The question is, squirrel takes off, tearing off into the woods. That's the question. But before that even happens, you're showing him the answer of, hey, this chicken who you're kind of interested in, but not really that interested, you, when I say come, you come back to me. And by really repping those out, that would be my next go-to. Brianna, do you have more on that?
No, I think, yeah, just repping it out, give him higher value when you are repping it so that he gets more amped to come back.
Yeah. Are you, have you found something for Maverick specifically that he like really, really enjoys?
Because yeah,
I know he's kind of food picky.
His vegetables. Use his vegetables.
Right. What about the vegetables?
Yeah. He does like his vegetables.
Yeah. What if you pick up some broccoli and like some fresh veggies and cut those up and put them in your treat pouch and use those for his recall when he's just really reluctant to do so.
And only. Yeah, and only for his recall.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't give it to him for anything else. Only for his recall. Yeah. So that basically, we just want to really try to make it super clear in his mind that, like, there's great things. I know that that squirrel looks really fun, but there's this highest value thing waiting for you.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, because you just need to, it's not an always thing, right? You're not always going to have to offer him the highest value to call him back. But right now, you have found something of highest value to him, which, I mean, we didn't really have a issue with squirrels when he was here, but I don't think we have like an extravagant amount of squirrels either.
Right.
But you
Nala,
have found
Nala
something.
Nala chases most of them away.
Yeah, Nala loves squirrels. She does chase them away. She goes out there in a huff if there are squirrels near her yard. So Maverick didn't have any to chase. But you have found something that's higher value, which means you need to up your value, which, right, we don't always want it to be the e-collar, right? So let's try something different. Let's give him a reward that he values of the highest, which according to you guys, I guess is still fresh vegetables, which is so crazy.
I love that. He's going to have such clean teeth.
I know he is. He's going to have good eyesight. He's going to have great teeth.
Okay. So, but joking aside, we're, why don't we try that?
Yeah.
Still pair the e-collar with it.
Oh yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. We're not just trading this out. We're just layering it. And then also really condition those vegetables, that high value treat. And it could be for anyone else that's listening who's having the same issue, you can pattern the same thing with whatever it is that your dog finds value.
Right. Cause we always tell people, like, your dog chooses what's valuable. Like, you don't, your dog does.
Yeah. But I want you to start patterning that recall process in the moments of a little bit lower, like, stress level, right? Stress where level. It's not a squirrel. If that's the, like, the one thing that's just like, oh, I cannot seem to break this. Well, then let's pattern the recall during something else.
Like a sniff.
Yeah, definitely. Or whatever, right? But pattern it all the time. So when he goes out, even like before he goes to the bathroom, right? You let him go out there, let him almost get ready to go to the bathroom, and then call him right back. And then give him...
But right?
I know it sounds silly. It sounds silly, but call him back and then give him that reward, give him that really high value treat, and then let him go back out. And then let him use the bathroom, then call him back in, give him that high value treat. Because what we need to start showing him is the picture that, hey, the faster I come back, one, I get a really awesome treat, and two, I just get to go back out. So it's not the end of my freedom.
Right. It's the repping that's going to create the behavior.
Yes, ma'am. All right. So we will wrap up our questions here. Yeah, sorry about that. I definitely had you on mute. I did not mean to do that.
No worries.
All right. The last part of tonight is our listener projects. So project number one, and so every week, quick reminder, recap, every week I try to give you guys two listener projects so that anybody that's listening that's just taking advantage of the free resource of the podcast can, you know, practice these tasks. So number one, daily sit routine. Ask for a sit before meals or doorways or play or before the dog gets something, right? Ask before access. Mark with yes and release with free. Those are our marker words. That's the way that we do it. Yes is our continuation marker. Free is our release or our terminal marker. Build automatic. What it's going to do is it's going to build some automatic impulse control. So just before you actually allow access to whatever it is, just ask for a sit. Sit. Yes. Good job. And then free. And then let them do what it was that you were about to do. All right. Project number two, place bed practice. So introduce a place bed in a quiet room. Have the dog walk over it a few times and then introduce that sequence that I talked about earlier, right? Guide the puppy onto it, mark with yes, then reward, then free, and toss a reward away just far enough for the dog to have to break their position in order to go get it. That reinforces the meaning of free and the meaning of yes. Yes, meaning that I'm bringing you the treat. Free, meaning you are breaking the command in order to go get the treat. Gradually increase the time on the bed and move around. So start increasing those three Ds, those distance, duration, and distractions. All right, that is all I've got here. So thank you for tuning in tonight, the day before Thanksgiving is when we're recording this, and I appreciate everybody for listening. Reach out on whatever, however you're listening to this or you're listening to it later. Reach out, send us a message, send us, why does it do that every time? I use the wrong dial. Let's try this again. Here we go. reach out and send me a message, send me an email, or leave us a review. Happy to respond. Always trying to improve, always trying to make this better. A couple of things that always seem to get us on this live recording process. Things falling down, rooms in construction. We're doing the best we can here. But thanks for tuning in. Everybody, have a great night.
Good night.